This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation pop experience. Welcome to another brand new series on Pop Goes to the Couch. We are discussing the latest entry into the MCU on Disney Plus, the long-awaited WandaVision. Very exciting. Disney Plus was so nice and dropped the first two episodes the first week. So we have two episodes to unpack, a lot to talk about. And we're very excited to get back to talking some comic book stuff. You know, it has been a while. Outside of Wonder Woman on the DC side, this is the start of what we're very excited for, because the movies are great, but these series are just going to be, you know, incredible. It's going to intertwine, and we see like almost to infinity of series we're going to get to, and a plethora of content to watch, consume, and then talk about here on Pop Goes to the Couch. Let's get the crew in and let's get this underway. Introducing first, Sean Kidd. Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Hey, good evening, Andy. Unlike Wonder Woman, I am looking forward to talking about this show tonight. So should be a fun little episode to chat through.
Yes, very excited. Also, Scott Shiflett.
Hey, Andy. Doing great. Looking forward to talking about WandaVision, and it won't be 4 hours like Zack Snyder's shitty cut of Justice League.
Well, you know, 4 hours is 4 hours too long for that movie. Anyway, and joining us as well, Tim Capel. Hey, Tim.
Greetings, gentlemen. I am eager to find out if you all are diamond hard in the composition of your molecules after watching these first two episodes of WandaVision.
Hey, I don't know if I'm supposed to get that joke or not.
It's a comic geek thing, Andy. It's okay.
Is it an Emma Frost reference? I don't know.
It's a Vision reference. It's okay.
Oh. Okay. Well, that's why you and Tim are here for that.
To explain the jokes.
Yes. Well, to explain
the erection jokes. We'll start off good again. Here we go.
Oh, off to a terrific stop as usual on this series. All right. So
I feel that I kept that very clean.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I blew that one right wide open. I apologize.
As soon as I say, keep it kayfabe, Sean. Anyway. All right, so very excited. Let's cut first, before we get into the episode, let's talk about our expectations, what we're looking forward to, like what were our reactions when it was announced. So let's go around the horn. We'll start with Sean. Sean, what were your feelings, your thoughts when we first heard about WandaVision and we started learning little details before everything that led up to your viewing of the first episode?
My expectations were very what I know about the comic books. I read the Vision and Scarlet Witch miniseries, and I figured, okay, it's probably going to be something like that. And then I thought about, well, Vision died in the movie, so I don't know how they do that. So I figured it was going to be something along the lines of Wanda's probably going to lose her mind or something like that. And then they started announcing the other movies, the Doctor Strange movie and everything. And the more they talked about it, the more I was like, okay, it's probably going to be some kind of Wanda thing. And if you read the comics, some form of House of M series kind of in the movie. So, yeah, I was really looking forward to this and what they were going to do with it.
Right. Scott, what were your thoughts when you first heard about this and all the information we learned leading up to this first episode?
Well, anytime I can get anything new Marvel coming out and it's executive produced by Kevin Feige, it's no crappy, you know, Inhumans TV show that they try to shove down our throat. And it was going to actually be part of the, you know, MCU. I was all in. And like Sean said, when we started getting more, you know, details and how, like, you know, Wanda's going to show up in, I believe, the Spider-Man movie and, you know, the Doctor Strange movie, I was like, okay, you know, Marvel's, they already got our hooks into us, but they're just going to drag us on more because we've already watched all the movies, but now they're going to be like, no, we're going to take over television too with Disney Plus. So I was excited for it.
All right. Tim, being a huge comics guy, what were your thoughts with all this? Because, you know, you have a pod on the Journey Position, the wonderful The Journey Through Infinity with you, Justin, Scott, and Jenny, that you guys cover all the movies. Yes. And So what are your thoughts, though, talking about the TV show and how it's going to relate and your comics knowledge leading up to this?
Well, much like Scott, I was just thrilled that Marvel was going to be getting what looked to be the Star Wars treatment and that they would be receiving just a number of high-profile, sort of prestige-looking, at least, drama series on Disney Plus, and hopefully a major departure from things like Inhumans and, to be quite honest, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which, fine for what it is, but you can't really compare that to something like The Mandalorian. And I'm hoping that these shows are something much more akin to the latter. So that's sort of where I am just in terms of the whole approach to this. As far as WandaVision itself, I got to tell you, this is probably the one I was most eagerly anticipating, only because it looks the weirdest, like in terms of what they have shown us and what we think the premise might be. We're not even sure about that. And similar to Sean, I was getting a sense that there'd be a lot of deep cuts from the comics. You look at the combined history of these two characters, Scarlet Witch and Vision, and they've been down some very bizarre paths. But I was kind of game to see how any and all of it might play out in this show. And I love Vision, MCU Vision as a character. So I'm like, is this going to be a vehicle to bring him back? So a lot of unanswered questions there. But I was pumped, the most pumped I've been for any of the Marvel series that have been announced thus far.
Oh, yeah. Like you guys, I was very excited. And, you know, I had no idea because I've never really read those comics or many comics at all. So I'm kind of like a blank slate. Like what I see in front of me, that's what I know. I know a little bit from listening to pods and hearing you guys talk and that stuff like that. So I have no idea. I mean, I have thoughts like, you know, what the hell is going on? Is it, you know, some kind of, are they trapped somewhere? Is it a mental breakdown that something's playing out over and over? Is somebody really messy? Is she a prisoner somewhere? Who knows? So, you know, all these questions hopefully will get answered and we'll start to learn what's going on. So it opens up like a classic 1950s sitcom with a catchy theme song. You see Wanda and Vision driving up, you know, they had just gotten married. The theme song's, oh, a happy newlywed couple just moved to a town, a regular husband and wife who left the big city to find a quiet life. Wanda, Vision, she's a magical gal in a small town locale. He's a hubby who's part machine. How will this duo fit in and fulfill all by sharing a love like you've never seen? WandaVision. So the, you know, it really is. I had a very I Love Lucy / Dick Van Dyke feeling going into this. Sean, what do you think of the opening here that's kind of setting up this episode at least?
Yeah, it was total, you said it perfectly, total I Love Lucy, Dick Van Dyke kind of feel, and definitely 50s vibe, even when they're walking into the house. And it was definitely sets up what you're going to watch this episode. Just, and it's so different from anything Marvel. You're like, what the hell's going on? This is, they're driving down the street, they're just married. And again, this kind of goes back to the comics, but it's more of on the comics where they actually retired from the Avengers and they bought their own house. So it's kind of like maybe that a little bit, except set in the 50s and the sitcom. So really, really weird opening, but definitely had definitely caught my attention.
Yeah. Scott, what do you think of the opening?
Like you and Sean said, with like the I Love Lucy, like I didn't even like catch on the Dick Van Dyke part, but yeah, like the I Love Lucy, and I don't know, it was odd, but also it felt refreshing for like, this is like a big change in a, you know, a big swing that Marvel's doing by like changing up how television shows are with this. And it's like, it felt sitcom-y, which I enjoyed as like, you know, we'll get to it, but like the issue was like taken care of within 30 minutes, which is very old school, you know, sitcom feel. But I just loved it. I loved like the black and white aesthetic as well, because we're supposed to be in the 50s when, you know, they didn't have like color TVs yet. It was weird and I was all in for it. And I was like, give me more.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I said Dick Van Dyke, because Dick Van Dyke does feel like a 50s sitcom, but actually premiered 1961. But that kind of, I don't know, I just had that feeling. We'll discuss a little further, but let's give Tim a chance to give his thoughts on the opening of this episode.
Yeah, I like how it was rewarding both to fans of the characters from the MCU and from the comics, if you're familiar with their comics history, and also rewarding just on the level of paying tribute to sitcoms, just the genre of sitcoms from television from years, decades past, and just works on the level of, you know, it can purely be enjoyed as a sitcom, even though we know there are going to be a lot of things going on beneath the surface. But there's just lots of little nods to fans of both the characters and just the trappings. You know, you got Vision phasing through the ottoman rather than tripping over it, as Dick Van Dyke did in that opening.
Yes.
So, and through the door where he drops her. Yeah, that was cool too when he walked through the front door.
Yeah, little touches like that. And I'm sure there are a lot more that I just didn't even catch. So that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of attention to detail that you'd hope to see from something like this.
Yeah, I applaud them because whoever wrote this and put this together, first of all, this series must have been a ton of fun to do set design, be on the set, to film all that. But they really went all in on the 1950s sitcom. They really go with the tropes. I mean, there are so many tropes in this of 50 sitcoms. If anybody's ever watched Nick at Night, who's our age, or any of the classic sitcoms, you will pick up on everything. So, like, of course, most episodes of those shows are anchored on a simple misunderstanding. This one, for them, it's Wednesday, August 23rd, and the kitchen calendar is marked with a heart. While neither Wanda nor Vision can't exactly remember why that might be, both of them are hesitant to admit that to each other, and he leaves for work with a mystery unresolved, and he shifts his face back into a human disguise. While Vision is away at the office, Wanda meets her next-door neighbor, Agnes, played by Catherine Hahn, and explains the mystery of the dates, I guess. She suggests that it might be their anniversary and volunteers to help her plan a special romantic night for Vision. It's a bit tricky because Wanda doesn't know their special song or any real details about their relationship, but they do come up with a plan. So, Scott, what did you think of this? You know, the heart is there. Vision goes away. We get our nosy neighbor, which, again, another trope of the sitcoms back then, and played by the wonderful Catherine Hahn, who I think is going to be the MVP of this series off the bat. What are your thoughts, though, on her introduction and what kind of is going on?
That's more like we start getting more questions. It's like even Wanda doesn't remember what's going on. She doesn't remember really anything. And, you know, we're like, she's like, I don't know when we got married. So it's like, is she being brainwashed? Or as Sean said earlier, did she like create this new reality and it's just, you know, making it up as we go? And Catherine Hahn's just great. She's like, oh, I'll help you, darling. And it was so like 1950s, and like it was like an old school warmth. Like, because I grew up watching like I Love Lucy and, you know, older shows like that. And the show we'll talk about for the second episode with Bewitched. But I don't know. It was just something like heartwarming. But like, you know, there's something sinister underneath the surface, which flares up at the end of this episode.
Yep. Tim, what do you think of the introduction of Agnes and the setting of the events in the classic misunderstanding?
I will say that going into this, my sort of personal fan theory, I guess you could call it, was that this was going to be a deliberate attempt to maybe recover Vision's consciousness. Like maybe this was some sort of VR simulation that Wanda was willingly participating in. But they've made it very clear that she is totally out of the loop, seems to have no recollection of her own or their history together. So you've already got that mystery set up right off the bat. You have Agnes coming in, who, yes, Catherine Hahn is brilliant. I will say that when they initially announced that she was cast in the series, at the time, for some reason, I read that as Katherine Heigl.
You're like, God, no.
Yes, which would have made for, like, I have to imagine, a very different performance.
I was going to say, what raging bitch was she going to play?
So when she...
Sean, I don't think it's an act from what I've heard.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So when Catherine Hahn makes her debut, I'm like, oh, why is she in this? I thought, and I went, oh, wait, I got super confused. I was like, boy, I've never been so happy to be wrong. But God bless Katherine Heigl, but I sure am glad to see Katherine Hahn in this series, in this role. And I do think Agnes is going to be, you know, breakout character. Already some ideas, some theories about who she might be, that, you know, I don't know, would be super original, but I guess we can touch on that as things progress here.
I did. I saw something come up on like Facebook saying, you know, read this if you want to kind of get it. And I have no idea. I read it and I'm like, I still don't understand it. Sean, what do you think of the introduction of Agnes and the, you know, the trope here of the classic misunderstanding?
I mean, it's a perfect sitcom setup. Again, I think she's perfectly cast. If you're going to have that nosy sitcom-y neighbor, she's definitely right up there with it. And again, there's some comic stuff in here that I could go through in terms of what were considered Easter eggs, but I think when you put Easter eggs into things and shows like this and those that don't read comics, it kind of gets a little confusing because, you know, there's a comment there that you can relate back to the movie. She talked about her husband's hard head. Well, we know his head's not that hard because Thanos crushed his head. There's a theory out there about the calendar. There's a theory for everything in this show, but instead of worrying about the theories, I just kind of want to sit back and watch how it plays out. But yeah, she's excellently cast, and yeah, it definitely gets you wondering, okay, is there something big about this date that is beyond what they're saying? It's obviously important to them, and I thought it was more than it actually was, at least in this episode. So yeah, I thought it was set up pretty good right out of the start.
Yep. All right. So continuing on with this episode, we got at the office, Vision discovers that the heart symbol is actually a reference to his boss, Mr. Hart, because the new guy's obligated to throw a dinner party that night for both he and his wife. After calling Wanda to make sure she remembered, Vision stays focused on a question that he can't answer. What is it he does at work exactly? Beyond computations, that is, with his coworker Norm, notes that he's like a human computer. Vision objects, I'm a regular carbon-based employee made of organic matter, much like yourself. When Vision and the Hearts walk into the living room, staged for a 1950s version of Seduction, is a moment so perfectly drawn from the sitcom tradition of conflict. It was, you know, Wanda is dressed one way, expecting one thing. And, you know, again, they think they're both on the same page, but not really. So, Tim, what do you think of introduction at the office of some of the coworkers and learning, you know, that happened in all sitcoms, the boss, you always had to have the boss and his wife over for dinner. And then Wanda, of course, is dressed as, I guess, as seductive as you can for 1950s. And what do you think of that setup?
We're getting some world building now in this constructed sitcom environment, seeing Vision at work. This also establishes that not only do Vision and Wanda have their powers intact here, they know how to use them, but they seem to be keeping them a secret to some extent. You know, Vision is going out of his way to deny that there's anything special, different, unique about him as he's filing his TPS reports. and much like Wanda, he seems rather confused when he actually sits down to reflect on what exactly it is that he's doing, what's the purpose of this, and he has no idea and doesn't get any answers either. We do see, I will point out one of those Easter eggs that Sean referenced. I think this is the first time we see it, but just a sort of a recurring visual cue. On his tie, there's a symbol. It looks like a sword, just a little design on his tie that we're going to see a couple more times throughout this, certainly the first two episodes, presumably the rest of the series, which probably ties back to an organization that's going to be, you know, pretty crucial to whatever the plot ultimately reveals itself to be here. So again, it's keeping you, your interest is held by just the sitcom trappings. You're just sort of following along as it leads you by the nose, like any good sitcom would do. And in the back of your mind, sort of questioning And every little thing you see, you're going, that's got to be something. That's got to be something. What does this all add up to? So you're kind of enjoying it on two different levels simultaneously.
Also, I didn't mention that the boss, Mr. Hart, is played by Fred Melamed, a veteran comedy, actor, character actor, and the great, wonderful Deborah Jo Rupp, you know, fresh off, but she was Kitty on that 70s show.
Brilliant.
And Asif Ali is the co-worker Norm. So, Sean, what do you think of this? We get to see Vision at work here, and, you know, the whole misunderstanding just gets worse and worse between the two of them, and they come home, and Wanda thinks one thing, and Vision obviously meant something else.
Well, there's nothing unusual about 300% productivity rate going up since this guy came in and he moves at lightning speeds. It's playing out like a sitcom, and nothing major is really happening where you're thinking, okay, I really don't get like where they're going with this. It seems like a normal sitcom. They do the boss to dinner trope, and of course, Wanda's expecting some robotic intercourse that night, and of course, that's not what they did. The boss is coming over for dinner, so I'm sure it'll set up the shenanigans. That's what I thought. Okay, this will set up the boss shenanigans, and there'll be all sorts of things and crazy that go wrong, and that's kind of what happened here. But I kind of like the flow of the series. I kind of like where it's going, and we're just, to Tim's point, we're learning more about this universe and playing kind of fleshing out the characters a little bit. And again, it's hard for me because I'm getting caught up in Easter eggs, like Tim talked about the tie with the Vision, and there's a lot of Easter eggs to kind of play through this, and sometimes if you think through the Easter eggs, you overdo it a little bit. So I'm trying to do my best not to do that, but I get pumped every time I think I catch one.
Yeah. All right, Scott, what do you think of this little part of this episode?
I enjoyed it. It was pure like 1950s TV trope, but I will say Elizabeth Olsen in the first two episodes looks amazing, and she looked amazing when she came in with like her lingerie, 1950s lingerie to supposedly surprise, who she thought was Vision, but it was Mr. Hart and Mrs. Hart. But it's just great. And then like we get like what's coming up is like, it's basically like it reminded me of an I Love Lucy gag where she's trying to cook, and we'll get to it, but it was just, I just enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So despite the goof up, Wanda and Vision do their best to improvise a somewhat magical evening happening for the Hearts with some major help from Agnes, who just happens to have the ingredients for an entire gourmet meal on hand. So basically it's Wanda in the kitchen trying to make this meal with her magic and in the help of Agnes's index cards. Apparently is going to make this lobster thermidor, I believe steak Diane. I forgot some kind of chicken dish. Yeah. There's a lot going on. And for somebody who doesn't know how to cook, I can imagine that was tough for her, even with the magic. And meanwhile, the Mrs. Hart is getting a little dizzy, and she wants to go and help, and opens the door, and all of a sudden, Vision breaks out into a version of Yakety Yak, and Mrs. Hart somehow does like the I forget what that dance is called, where she's kind of doing almost like the Batuzzi a little bit, not with the eyes, but like with her arms and her elbows, and then we get a rendition of Old MacDonald Had a Farm. And then, Wanda has to improvise a little further. So what'd you think of the whole close calls part of the episode, Sean?
I enjoyed it. Very Bewitched moments here, right? Mm-hmm. With I enjoyed when she did the turkey or the chicken or whatever, and she went too far back and they made them eggs and then she burned them. And I really enjoyed this. And I having Vision seeing Yakety Yak was pretty funny. That was very unexpected. And again, it's just your comedy of errors leading to a pivotal moment in your next segment, which was kind of our first sign of, okay, something's off here. But again, I like this. I like the tropey angry boss with the ditzy wife, and good sitcom stuff going on right here. It's very well written for the timepiece it's going for.
Yeah. Yeah. Scott, what do you think of this kitchen mishap, I guess?
Like Sean said, like the chicken part was great, and like you see like her using her powers and all the food is like levitating, the lobster disappears, and that's a joke that we'll see at the end of the episode. But I did enjoy the Yakety Yak part, and like the red's wife Kitty Mrs. Hart is like starts singing and dancing. She's just so adorable. But I love like the husband getting upset and he's like, I'm getting hungry, and it was just great.
Yeah, because you know he fired somebody for only having five courses or something out of the previous one of these meals. Tim, what did you think of this sequence?
First of all, I got to say, I really love their house, and we get to see a lot of it in this scene, like their kitchen and just the whole layout. It's just, you know, one of those great 1950s, 1960s sitcom houses that, I don't know, it's just kind of good real estate porn, I felt like. I may be alone in that, but I always notice these things and try to appreciate them. But yeah, we get some very like goofy, very cornball humor. But once again, it's that kind of tropey setup, like Sean said, where that it's being true to the source material, the sitcom elements that it's trying to evoke, I should say. So you wonder how far they're going to take it, right? Like, is this the episode, or are we still, you know, waiting for the show to start, right? So I think it's sort of taking a big risk to run with this setup for as long as they do.
Yeah, I mean, your first 15 minutes has been all sitcom, and you're all wondering, okay, when's something going to drop, right? So I think it's risky.
Exactly.
It's definitely risky.
Mm-hmm. It is. But, you know, I think everybody was so excited for this. I think they get that pass, I guess. The MCU really hasn't failed us. I mean, maybe except for, you know, the Thor, the doo-doo world or something. But as I've heard quoted on another show.
Doctor Strange.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Let's stay positive.
All right. Iron Man 3. All right.
But I think they're given a lot of rope, so to speak, and the MCU fans will take the ride with them. I guess, you know, they have that luxury. So the gourmet dishes proposed by Agnes don't exactly work out to Wanda because of Wanda. So she pivots and goes for breakfast for dinner. But once they actually sit down to eat, the conversation gets tense because Wanda and Vision simply can't answer basic questions about their past. Then we kind of go from a sitcom to almost a Twilight Zone for a few moments. The intensity rises to the point where Mr. Hart begins to choke and he collapses to the ground, only surviving after Vision uses his phasing powers to clear his throat of the obstruction. You know, it was very freaky. I'm trying to remember now exactly what Mrs. Hart kept saying over and over. I'm sure one of you guys can say that when we get to you. But, you know, after he removes the strawberry, it turns out things snap back to normal, quote unquote, at that point, and the Harts leave. Wanda and Vision, culling on the couch together, decide to make Yakety Yak their official song. Then Wanda magics up some wedding rings for them, and Vision declares that they live happy ever after. But, and then we'll talk about the last few moments of the episode in a moment. So, Scott, you know, we have the dinner party, and this is when really things start to tell a different story, so to speak. What did you think of the little change here?
Well, first off, breakfast for dinner is always the best dinner in my book. So I'm just going to lead off with that. But it got real creepy. Like, I think she was saying, please help, as he's choking to death. And like you said, it reminded me of the Twilight episode where the guy can, like, make everyone go away to the cornfield. And that's what it felt like. Like, he wasn't, like, she wasn't getting her way because, like, he said, I want to know the answers. And, like, he was slamming his hand down. Mr. Hart was slamming his hand down on the table. And Wanda didn't like that. So she made him start choking. And, like, you know, Mrs. Hart's like, please stop. Please stop. And you see, like, tears in her eyes. It got real creepy. Twilight Zone episode is 100% right with that, Andy. And then, like, you know, Vision, like, shows him that he's an android, basically, by phasing in and, like, saving him. And then they're like, oh, it's all good now. But, yeah, it was creepy. And made me think, like, oh, maybe Wanda is in control of all this and doing this because, like Sean said at the top of the podcast, Vision's dead. He was killed, you know, in Infinity War. So, yeah, something's going on. Yeah. Something's afoot.
Tim, what do you make of this sequence?
Mrs. Hart essentially glitching out over and over is sort of the first sign that something has gone terribly amiss here. And Vision seems rather passive in his reaction to all of this, and it really takes Wanda, like, snapping into action. You know, it was like a switch was flipped in her where she just goes, "Vision, help him." And she just kind of goes into what feels like superhero mode, which is very different from the way she's been characterized otherwise throughout this episode. And sure enough, Vision does save the guy, but there's like nothing more said about it. So as you said, Andy, it felt like this whole scene just seemed to fall out of a different show altogether, more like a Twilight Zone or, you know, a touch of horror that has now invaded this innocent little sitcom. So this is where we're starting to see, all right, the show is has got that extra layer of foreboding, and perhaps we're going to see more of these cracks as things go on. But yeah, that definitely piqued my curiosity. I don't know that I've developed any coherent thoughts or ideas around it, but boy, did they have me glued to that scene.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the whole stop it, stop it. Sean, what do you think of this scene?
Yeah, this was the moment we've been waiting for since it started, and this is where they got you hook, line, and sinker, kind of like what Tim said. You know, it was like creepy moment you were waiting for to see what was happening, and then the wife saying stop it, the husband choking, Wanda kind of like freezing in her mind, and Vision and her couldn't answer a question that caused it, and you could tell this is where something is definitely wrong here. And I'm with Tim. I don't think I've been able to formulate a thought at this point about, you know, what's really going on or whatever, but it's clear there's something to miss. And I think it was great to build up to this moment in this episode, because I read some reviews online where people are like, oh, this is stupid, this is a sitcom. And those are people that probably don't quite get what they're trying to do in crafting the show. This was a good payoff to where I'm going to watch next episode to see what the hell creepy shit happens next time. So mm-hmm. I thought this was great.
Yeah. So we have two more things to talk about, and then we'll talk about theories, Easter eggs, whatever else we want to talk about. So this episode closes, though, right after, you know, it looks like a traditional sitcom ending, but then the camera pulls back and reveal they're being watched by someone. And, you know, I'm sure you guys recognize this, but for me, it's like, oh, this is something I see every day at my job, because it's editing and edit bay, basically. You see the same kind of monitors with waveforms and all that kind of stuff. So something's going on here. You know, it's a show, but it's a show within a show, somewhat, so to speak. Does that make my brain hurt a little bit? So, Tim, what did you think of the last few moments with the reveal that somebody is watching them?
Yeah, here again, still kind of wondering, are we dealing with a some kind of simulated reality, and someone is like watching these events in much in the same way that we are, or is this a world that has been created and someone has, like, you know, surveillance on it? Maybe there's, you know, they've got a drone and they're monitoring and getting very limited information back. It seems more probably that, because whoever the speaker is sounds even far more confused than we, the viewers, whoever this person may be, who clearly is getting some information and trying to help, question mark. Seems like they are. But anyway, yeah, I like immediately had so much in my head, just again thinking like, that is so not what I expected, because I knew it was going to contain elements of classic sitcoms. I didn't think it would actually truly embody a classic sitcom plot. Like, this could just work purely on the level of like an episode of any old random sitcom. You know, you could sit down and kind of enjoy it on just on that basis, aside from the things that are clearly not meant to be that. And I agree with Sean that that's very deliberate. But yeah, I mean, just to see that's they really put all their eggs in that basket. And I was rather surprised, but pleased at the end of the day.
Yeah. Sean, what do you think of the ending moments of this episode?
So a little bit of the Truman Show happening there. You know, here I have a theory, and this is what I was thinking at the end. It's okay, so it's a show within a show. And then, of course, you saw the sword insignia off to the side. And I know you're going to talk about Easter eggs, but sword is also, I believe we saw that. I'm trying to remember, where did we see, what movie was it we saw sword in at the end where Nick Fury was with the Skrull? Which one was that?
The second Spider-Man, Far From Home.
Yeah. So we know sword already is the offset of S.H.I.E.L.D. at space that Nick Fury runs from the last Spider-Man movie. So we kind of know that's who they are. But what threw me off guard was them watching it and seeing it on a TV, and that totally threw me off because I'm like, okay, how are they watching this? And then I started to get in all these theories in my head about there's a telepath out there, and they're watching her mind through this, and it's clearly that they're trying to get through to her. And I went through all these theories, and I'm just curious to see how it plays out because I'll drive myself crazy with the theories. But again, great ending to kind of keep us going into the next episode. I thought it was fantastic.
All right. Scott, what were your thoughts?
When it was ending, I was like, wow, we're not going to get any, like, you know, insight to like what's going on in the outside world. And then like you guys said, it like you pan out and it's like someone's taking notes and it's like the sword logo, which honestly I had to look up. I watched this with my little brother and he was like, yeah, it's a sword logo. I was like, that was a good catch. But it like Sean said, it gave more questions than answers. And Sean, with you saying a telepath, that's very interesting because that means a certain type of team may be added to the MCU if they're using telepaths. Mm. But we'll get to that shortly.
All right. And the one thing we didn't talk about was a very creative commercial that we saw. We now... which is the Stark Industries Toast Mate 2000. It was the first time we've seen even a smidgen of color in that part. It was very interesting because there was something off, especially about the woman. She kind of gives a look at one point. It threw me. Sean, what did you think of the Stark Industry Toast Mate 2000 commercial? Well,
first off, I thought the tribute to 50s commercials was fantastic. This one, I will talk about the Easter eggs in this one. So the Toaster Mate, there's two things you could look at it for me as a comics fan.
I know where you're going with this.
Well, maybe. We'll see. I want to know. We'll see at the end. I have to know if you think that's wrong, if that's what you're thinking. But anyway, obviously the Toaster Stark Industries kind of Wanda and her brother in the movies blame Stark for their situation. They were trapped under a rubble and their apartment was destroyed, and that was because of Stark, I believe, military. But more important for me is they're in the comics. There's a comic where Vision and Wanda split up and Wanda calls him a walking toaster.
Yep.
And okay, so that's where I don't know if they were going for that or if they were going for the Stark reference as well, but it popped me on both ends because I'm like, holy shit. This could be her. This could be like kind of a thing about the Vision when she called him a toaster for those that read the comics. So again, me going too deep into the comics and my theories. So,
I went there too. So
okay, good.
You're definitely not alone. Because it was one of those, like, that was always the joke for the longest time that Wanda was just in love with a toaster. And because yes. Vision, like, yeah, he's a person, but he's not human. Is he even real? Like, just all those questions have always been a big part of his character in the comics. And yeah, there was something that happened to him that basically took away like all of his humanity at one point. And he essentially was just a walking toaster. And I mean, catching up with him in this show where, as we know, the last time we saw him, he was quite dead. you wonder what his ultimate state or fate is going to be when all is said and done here. I will say I do want a Toastmate 2000 toaster. It looked pretty badass.
Yeah. Scott, what did you think of this commercial spot?
You know, like I immediately thought, like Sean did, like we were introduced to Wanda by her – you know, going against Stark because they saw the Stark bomb and it's like, you know, is that like a repressed memory? I know she ended up turning good and like helping out Tony Stark to the very end of his life, but you know, it's just interesting, but also I liked it because if we were watching this in the 1950s, you know, we would have saw like a Stark Industries ad for some craziness because, you know, they just weren't working on weapons. So it fit like a double role right there.
Mm-hmm. All right. So any last thoughts, any, you know, Easter eggs, any theories on who, you know, we were introduced to a few characters. So we have Agnes, we have the Hearts. We have Norm. So any thoughts on anybody they could actually end up being? Because I assume everybody that is a character in this will be a character outside of the whatever this TV show thing is. Tim, any Easter eggs you want to mention or anything else I asked about?
Here's something that's it's like blatantly obvious, but is maybe you don't necessarily think is significant. And I don't know if it will be or not. We establish right away Vision and Wanda have powers within the universe of this, of WandaVision. Wanda's powers are not what we've seen them to be in the MCU, which were always admittedly somewhat vague. What was the line in Age of Ultron? He's fast and she's weird, mm-hmm. where she just kind of has like generic telekinesis and does mental brain fuckery kind of things. And like, that was about where we left her, I think, in the movies, but she's just doing full on magic throughout this episode, like transmuting objects into other things. And it's just like, this is pure sorcery. And that seems like outside of the purview of what we've seen her able to do just in the MCU. But I think is going to ultimately amount to something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing that I read, the wine that they drink is House of M, I guess is the vintage.
Oh, was that was that the label?
Yeah. It was called Maison du Mepris or whatever. And yeah, I guess okay. That translates to House of Contempt. So mm-hmm. they think that was kind of a throwback to House of M. So that's one of the going theories. I was reading that too.
Mm-hmm. Sean, anything else you want to add about this episode?
No, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of Easter eggs that I read, and I'm trying to stick to ones that I think make sense. I mean, there was one about the calendar that I was like, yeah, I don't know if it's a stretch where it was August, like, was it August 23rd? And it had something to do with an issue of the Avengers where Vision was reactivated. I'm like, oh, you guys are stretching this stuff. So I'm going to try and stick to the Easter eggs I think make sense and not the theories of ones that they're trying to be smart fans. So mm-hmm. I'm good with what we've talked about.
All right. And Scott, anything else that we haven't covered?
I mean, you brought up the House of M wine that I was going to talk about, but yeah, like Sean said, I didn't want to go too crazy because I feel like the show is deliberately like setting up like rabbit holes you can fall down and just lose yourself in. So I'm waiting to see, and then like after this whole show is over, go back and watch, like, oh, that's why, you know. But yeah, it was just great. I loved it.
All right, cool. So that's going to wrap up our discussion of WandaVision episode 1. But we're not done. Disney Plus dropped 2 episodes, so we're going to talk about 2 episodes. So in just a moment, we'll talk about episode 2 of season 1 of WandaVision. All right, Place to Be Nation Pop Experience. We are back on Pop Goes to the Couch. We have talked about WandaVision Season 1, Episode 1, but to our pleasant surprise, Disney Plus dropped the first 2 episodes. So we have another episode to unpack, to discuss on this initial offering of this Pop Goes to the Couch series with Sean Kidd, Scott Shiflett, and Tim Capel. I am Andy Afton, and here we go with Episode 2. So we get a recap at the beginning. I'm not sure how I feel on that, but I thought it was, you know, nice, even though I had just literally watched the episode 2 seconds ago. But we get a cold open that features Wanda and Vision in their separate twin beds, which again is the time period it's taken by, shaken out of the slumber by a disturbing noise outside their bedroom. while it shakes both of them up, the good news is that it turns out to only be a branch, and that in the heat of the moment, Wanda was inspired to shove their beds together. So some, you know, witch and robot love may be happening there. it was, yeah, very tropey, you know. Again, now we're in, like, the early 60s. This episode had a very Bewitched feeling to me, even though there were some Bewitched in the first episode. This one felt really more. I mean, we get a new open, second episode, which is an animated sequence, no real lyrics outside of keep hearing WandaVision. And we see some more characters. We see Agnes. You know, but now we see like another neighbor, somebody in the grocery store. We see people like, you know, the mailman. We see a guy trimming his hedges. All, you know, we see the guy that I think had gotten fired in the first episode. All these people show up as like, you know, these are supposed to be, I guess, important. And then, you know, so we'll get to that in just a second. So, Scott, we'll start with you. What did you think of this cold open with, you know, Vision and Wanda kind of being a little freaked out by the noise outside, and then into the new animation open?
Well, with them being freaked out, I thought it was pretty interesting because they were both scared, even though they're, you know, literally superheroes. And it's like, you know, Vision forgot that, you know, he's made of, you know, he can phase through anything and doesn't really take any damage unless you're Thanos. So, you know, he was scared of it. It was a nice little 60s trope. And I will say, I love the Bewitched opening. I wish Wanda would have done something with her nose like they used to do in Bewitched to do something that would have been, you know, the icing on the cake. But I enjoyed it. And, you know, Sean pointed out when we were chatting before the podcast that there's a bunch of Easter eggs in the intro, which I'm sure he'll get to. But yeah, I loved it. Like this show is just killing it for like nostalgia and making me want to be like, what the hell's going on? What's the mystery? So yeah.
Tim, what do you think of the cold open into the animation?
Okay, so I think with this episode you're starting to see something emerge here, a pattern where it's not just going to be a celebration of the American sitcom, but the evolution of the American sitcom also, just the way that it opens with the two of them in their separate beds, which is always so hilarious, but that really was a thing, right? We remember from our childhood watching these in reruns, not as they were airing at the time, but that's one of those things that gets talked about, gets joked about today. But then she sort of bucks that convention by putting the beds together, right? So just sort of a thematic way of kind of moving past that trope and on to bigger and better things, essentially. Then right into the animation, yes, very Bewitched, very loaded with Easter eggs, which I feel like, I don't know that we should talk about. I don't know how relevant they're going to be, but there is definitely some stuff in here, just sprinkled in little references from the comics. I will say I didn't love the recap, the previously on, just because that wasn't something that classic sitcoms did, was it? I mean, they were so episodic.
They're very contained episodes.
Yeah, there would be no reason to, right? Unless it was, you know, like a rare two-parter or something. So that was, like, obviously it was just done for the sake of the viewer, but I think, you know, I could have just done without it. Like, who is just watching a random episode of this show without watching the preceding episodes? You know, like, it just didn't seem necessary.
A lunatic that starts with episode 2 then goes to episode 1.
Yeah, I think that's just where I'm going to jump in on WandaVision here.
That's like crazy talk. I mean, so yeah.
It felt kind of like it just didn't need to be there.
Yeah, once they knew they were dropping the first two, maybe they could have lost it, because they figure everybody who wants to watch it are definitely going to go. Because it's, you know, the first episode's 37 minutes, second one's 30 minutes. Who's not going to sit there and really go into the other? Because you're, you know, you get your, you know, appetite, you know, wet, whatever, from the first one. And you're like, okay, well, this is here. Why am I not going to watch it? Mm-hmm. You know, Sean, what do you think of the cold open into the animated sequence?
Yeah, I'm like Tim. I don't know why you needed the previous episode when there's not any asshole that has Disney Plus that's not going to watch the first episode and then watch the second one back to back. You know what I mean? I dug the Bewitched opening. I thought it was very fitting for, you know, the magic that Wanda does. I enjoyed that. Vision looked very Darren-esque in it as well, which I thought was pretty cool. I'm not gonna go into the Easter eggs as well, because a lot of the Easter eggs that are in this are pure comics Easter eggs that a lot of people won't get unless they actually read it, the comic book. So I'm curious to see if any of those Easter eggs actually play out. Then it'll be makes more sense to talk about, I think. But right now it's there to pop people like me and Tim, I think.
Help me if we get a Bova appearance, though.
If we get a Bova appearance, I might have a heart attack. That'd be a great moment.
I'll stroke out.
I will all time stroke out. Anyway, I won't even talk about Bova right now. We'll hold that thought. But as far as the opening with the split beds and the trees scaring them, I wonder if there's something to that that long term plays out, because Vision was quite the pussy, I want to say, when it comes to the tree scratching on the window. And I don't know, that was kind of a weird opening. I didn't quite understand where they were going with it, so a little odd. But I love the actual cartoon opening, and then the kind of open with the beds was, yeah, it was all right. I didn't really, I mean, I get what they're going for, because it's classic sitcom stuff, but I didn't get the whole tree thing. Maybe I missed something there.
Yeah, I maybe it was just kind of set up that there's something going on outside. I mean, it could be something that we see later on in the episode.
Oh, well, yeah, I get the reference for later on, yes, but I didn't get why he was scared of it at this point in time, was my point, I guess.
Yeah, who knows? It is, you know, TV comedy, so. So the open ends, and we come into the episode as Wanda and Vision rehearse their act for the town's talent show fundraiser. They, you know, magic tricks that don't actually require actual magic, with a vanishing cabinet, amongst other things, because in real magic, everything is fake, according to Wanda. Rehearsal ends because Wanda has to go to the planning committee meeting for the fundraiser, and Vision wants to check out the local neighborhood watch meeting at the local library. But then Wanda hears a buzzing noise outside and discovers a toy helicopter has landed in her bushes, one with a very different color scheme. It throws Wanda for a loop, but Agnes shows up, arrives just in time to whisk her off to the committee meeting, won by Dottie, who is played by Emma Caulfield Ford from, if you remember her from Buffy, she played the demon. I forgot what her character's name on it. It's been so long since I've seen it. And Agnes warns Wanda that Dottie is the queen of the cul-de-sac, so getting on her good side is essential for Wanda's future success in the neighborhood. But the planning committee meeting doesn't go so great. Despite Wanda making a new friend in Geraldine, played by Tiana Paris, Wanda does her best, but is awfully awkward with the other girls. So we'll start with Tim. Very Pleasantville here also, by the way, with the one thing in color as opposed to everything black and white. But what do you think of the, the rehearsal of Wanda and Vision? And then we have Agnes coming back to take Wanda to the planning committee fundraiser at the local country club, I guess. And the color helicopter with the sword logo on it. So
I definitely thought of Pleasantville also, just in terms of this presentation and the one color penetrating this, you know, black and white universe. What could that helicopter be? Well, astute comics readers will recall that in his early appearances, Thanos had a helicopter known as the Thanos Copter. I don't think it's going to be a reference to the Thanos Copter, although that would be amazing. But it's obviously it's something very out of place for this universe. But I can't really tie that back to anything specific at the moment. The rehearsal for the magic show, some fun stuff there. Vision trots out like the giant wardrobe, which looks like it should be something, right? But here again, I don't know that I want to speculate too much. And Agnes kind of whisking Wanda off at a somewhat convenient time to meet up with the other, wives of this town, sort of Stepford wives a little bit, feels like, in terms of the way that Dottie is presented as like their ringleader and just kind of the alpha female of this group. I've heard maybe she is in some way connected to the Doctor Strange universe. And I've actually put the episode on in the background. Her appearance and hairstyle sort of similar to a character called Clea or Clea. I never know how to pronounce that.
Yeah.
Remember her?
Uh-huh. It's his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. But was always like a very benevolent kind of character, whereas Dottie seems somewhat malevolent. But I don't know. Maybe they've turned that on its head. We'll see. If that's even who it's meant to reference, I don't know.
It's a good theory.
Yeah. And also, Geraldine is, as a lot of people have known, is Monica Rambeau, the grown-up daughter of, what the hell is her name? Rambeau from Captain Marvel. I can't remember her mom's name. You guys need to correct me. Somebody's yelling at their phone right now because I'm an idiot. But she also
John
has
Rambo, daughter of John Rambo. That's
but she also has another Monica Rambeau actually has another name also, right? In the comics.
She has multiple. She actually becomes the second Captain Marvel, well, the third Captain Marvel in theory, I guess. But yeah, she has Captain Marvel, she's called Photon, she's called a bunch of different names in her comics.
All right, so Sean, what did you think of, you know, we have
Maria Rambeau was
Maria Rambeau, thank you.
Was Carol Danvers' friend, which we don't get this because that's not a thing in the comics. Monica was just Monica. She wasn't, she didn't have a famous mother who was friends with superheroes or anything.
She was a New Orleans police officer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
With very nice elderly parents who were like, her dad was like a fishing boat captain or something.
Yep.
I don't know. So yeah, different history there.
Yep.
All right. So Sean, give us your thoughts on, so we have the rehearsal, we have Agnes coming back, the red helicopter and the committee planning meeting with Dottie.
So I thought there was an interesting comment that Wanda said to Vision when they were practicing her act. She goes, in a real magic act, everything is fake. So if I'm going to be reading into it too much, does that mean, okay, so she's the magic and this is her magic and this whole world is fake? Is that something they're alluding to, or am I reading too much into it? So there's a thought there. I could totally be reading too much into it. Obviously, the helicopter, you guys brought up Pleasantville, has a sword insignia on it, has the Iron Man suit colors in it, which I also thought was a good call out. And then again, my mind started working again. Okay, in this world, we're probably going to see some helicopters go down. And maybe this is kind of like a sign of things to come. I don't know. I was probably reading too much into it again. And then, yeah, the Dottie character is really kind of a bitch. So I'm kind of curious. I like Tim's theory on her being, I think it was Cleo, which I think is Doctor Strange's girlfriend. In some
like
of the comics,
apprentice kind of thing,
or apprentice or whatever. Yeah, so that was a good theory. I don't know if that's how it'll play out, but I like that kind of call. That's pretty good. But yeah, this whole Stepford Wives things, like Tim said, is a little weird when they all get together. So,
yep. Scott, what are your thoughts?
Like when we see the red with the plane, that is striking. But on the plane, it was actually the sword logo. Mm-hmm. So what I think is the tree, you know, branch hitting the window the night before was actually maybe that plane, that helicopter crashing. You know, Wanda felt something was coming in, but she didn't know what it is because she doesn't even really know what's going on anymore. I know I'm going way off. I'm shooting for the stars with this one, but I just feel she's controlling it. And like, it's like a combination of Pleasantville, Truman Show, you know, with the Stepford, like with you guys with Dottie. That's what I thought of immediately, was like the Stepford Wives with Dottie. Like, you know, she's prim and proper. And when we meet Geraldine, you see that all the other females there are wearing skirts except for Wanda. And Geraldine even like comments on it. It's like, oh, you're not going to wear a skirt. And like, cause she's wearing jeans and a nice shirt. So, you know, something's definitely going on right now.
Well, she's wearing capri pants, which was a big deal when Mary Tyler Moore as Laura Petrie wore them on the Dick Van Dyke show for the first time. We really rarely saw women dressed like that in sitcoms, I believe. I mean, very rarely did we, you know, she was going around the house doing housework. Why isn't she wearing a dress? That was people's kind of thoughts back then. So we get to the end of the meeting and Wanda, you know, has to help Dottie clean up, but things take a somewhat twisted turn after she says that her and Vision mean no harm. And Dottie says, I don't believe you. And then the clock radio nearby shifts from the song Help Me Rhonda to a male voice kind of hearing like some radio feedback. Who's doing these to you, Wanda? Kind of going along with Help Me Rhonda. It's what's going on, Wanda. And the world feels like it's starting to fall apart and people get kind of like caught up in it for a minute. Like Wanda is looking and Dottie's like not going, realizing what's going on. Then Dottie's glass breaks in her hand. The blood, you know, runs all over. The laugh track returns. And and then we see her, you know, how did we get a blood stain out of a, you know, your handkerchief or whatever she says. So, Sean, what's going on here? What do you think happening with the radio?
I think that, so whether it's Wanda's created this world or someone's controlling this world that Wanda's in, somebody's trying to break through to her. And I thought it was pretty cool that they broke in on Help Me Rhonda and saying and calling out Wanda during that song. I thought that was kind of cool. Who's doing this to you, Wanda? Almost very haunting, like, who's doing this to you, Wanda? It was very haunting. So, again, someone's on the outside that's not in this world trying to break through to her, whether it's in her psyche or whatever, because someone else is controlling it. And then the glass breaking was really weird and the blood was shining bright red. This is just a really weird scene that, you know, Dottie's basically saying, I don't believe you, and like almost thinks that she almost knows what Wanda and Vision are, and or at least it's alluded to, and then that happens. So really kind of another one of those weird scenes like we saw with the boss choking in the last episode to keep you hooked about, all right, something's really going on here, and this Help Me Rhonda, who's doing this to you, Wanda, makes you think even more about what the hell's going on in this world and who's in charge of it. It just got my mind going.
Yeah, one thing I neglected to say was Catherine Hahn had a really great line in there. How's anybody doing this sober? And she starts putting booze in her glass. I thought that was pretty funny. And it's actually Anya, who Emma Caulfield plays on Buffy. So I got to get my Buffy cred back. Scott, what do you think of this little, kind of, yeah, like Sean said, this is our kind of something's not right going on here moment.
I like that they did it sort of like in the beginning to the middle part of the episode, because we didn't really see anything strange until the end of the episode with the choking of Mr. Hart in episode one. So I like this. And, you know, I agree with Sean. Like before, it seemed like Wanda was in charge. But with like, who's doing this to you, Wanda? That makes it seem like maybe she's not in charge of this. Like, you know, someone's like manipulating her mind, which we have seen has happened before with Age of Ultron. So it, you know, it gives us more questions. And unlike Lost, I think there's going to be questions, answers to all these questions, because like we know what's going on here.
Yeah. Tim, what are your thoughts?
I am starting to think now that Wanda, this whole thing started out with Wanda being manipulated by someone. And whoever that someone was maybe worked themselves into a chute, and this thing has spun beyond their control. And like Wanda is calling the shots, but maybe isn't consciously aware of that. I think that, I guess I'll just say it. I think she has like warped reality on some kind of like localized scale, and Sword or Shield or whoever has like caught wind of that. You know, maybe she was even on a mission for them and they're trying to help her, but they're just getting swept up into it also. Like, you know, this helicopter, maybe it spun out and got warped into this thing also. And now it's, you know, what started as a real Sword helicopter is now just turned into this toy that is out of place, but certainly in a very different form from what it should be. And we're just seeing these little indicators of the real world, like bleeding through into this. And you know, red being the color you think of Iron Man's armor, sure. You also think Red. Well, her code name was Scarlet Witch, right? Which, mm-hmm. even though she doesn't really use it in the movies, I think people kind of know that. So I think that's where we're headed, ultimately. And Dottie and Agnes, I'm still not sure what their game is, but I think that both of them are kind of onto it or in on the joke. Are they both trying to help her? Are they both trying to hurt her? Is one actually an enemy and the other, you know, an ally? I don't know. But that's sort of what I'm thinking now.
Yeah, that's one of the big questions or mysteries. Like, who is on, what side is everybody on? Mm-hmm. Who's here to help? Who's here to hinder or hurt? So now we have another commercial break. And this time we have a watch. The Strucker watches, about, and it's the same two actors as in the Stark toaster commercial from the first one. Scott, what did you think of this commercial with Strucker? And, you know, we have the Hydra symbol on the watch and everything. I mean, I popped big time for it. What did you think?
Well, with Strucker, I immediately thought of Baron von Strucker, who, as we know, is part of Hydra and relatively bad guy. And yeah, it's like, what are we seeing here? Like, you know, it's just like an alternate reality as well, with like Hydra just being out there for everyone to see. But I'm enjoying these like classic commercials. But it definitely, like, I'm just like, I just want to know more. And this is something that I believe that JT had said in one of the group chats, that if this would have been just able to binge it all, it would have answered all of our questions. But I'm just getting ahead of myself. I just want to know everything now, type deal. But yeah, it was just like another thing. And it's like, oh, people are like, oh, why is this watch commercial there? It's like, because it's a Nazi.
Well, Strucker has a close ties to Wanda. You know, he was responsible for, whatever testing or whatever they were doing on them, you know, in Ultron. Tim, what do you think of this Strucker watch commercial?
Yeah, I'm still trying to – I kind of want to bounce off of Sean here. Like, in the same way that we thought a toaster was significant beyond just being a commercial of the day, like, is a watch significant to Hydra as just something that they're shilling? I don't know. I mean, yeah, the obvious one there is Wanda and her brother got their powers from Hydra, from Baron Strucker, but why the watch, right? I don't know. I'm kind of stuck on that one.
Yeah, Sean.
I'm kind of with you. I don't know if it's just the toaster one was kind of obvious, at least for me, but this one, not so much. The Hydra signal, yeah, Hydra gave them their powers, I think, with the Mind Stone. I think Strucker gave it to him with that. I don't know if it's linked to what we see at the end of this episode, maybe. Based on what I think that might be when we talk about that. So yeah. I'll wait and talk about that till we get to the end.
I mean, is it just the reference that, like, just the passage of time? Hydra has always been there.
Maybe, or Hydra is still involved and they're linked to what we see at the end.
Still behind the scenes, but...
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
That might be my theory right now. Maybe.
All right.
Yeah, so, I think we're thinking in the same direction on that. The ending. All right.
So we get back from commercial break, and Vision shows up at the neighborhood watch at the library, and it's really a more of a social meeting for the gentlemen. They talk about, you know, Danishes and talking gossip about a treehouse that was prefabricated, bought in Hackensack. I don't know if they're referring to Hackensack, New Jersey, but I don't know any other Hackensacks. We get to meet Herbert, I think his name is, another character. As well as we see all the other men, basically, that we've met. We see, I forgot the guy was with the mustache. We see Norm there, the mailman. And, you know, the whole joke is about, you know, Vision's like, oh, I don't eat food. And they see, and he has to catch himself, well, between meals. And he gets offered a stick of Big Red gum, which he takes and he chews. And he accidentally swallows it. And the result of for a synthetic creation like him is basically like chugging a bottle of tequila, and he gets kind of ends up late at the talent show. It gums up the works, no pun intended. Tim, what do you think of the Neighborhood Watch and getting to really meet some of the other gentlemen in this town?
I thought some of these other gentlemen reminded me of like some of the random council members from Schitt's Creek. Like, just some of the, if anyone else has watched this, you'll know who I'm talking about. Just some of those random side characters who are always very funny. I know that's not what they were going for, but it's just what it made me think of.
I'm sure my girlfriend will explain it to me because she's watched and I haven't. So
yeah. And the stuff with the gum, pretty funny. Like, it's obviously just meant to like signify he got drunk, basically, mm-hmm. in his very unique vision way, and hijinks will ensue off of that. Like, is that a thing though, that vision from the movies has been carried over, like that he can't eat? Didn't we see him eating in Civil War? Like, I don't know that.
I think he was cooking, but he didn't eat. I think Wanda tasted it.
Yeah, I had the same thought. I thought we saw him cooking in the kitchen, but you're right. But he probably wasn't eating.
Yeah. He was cooking for Wanda just when they were trying to keep her away from everyone in Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, I mean, I doubt if he swallowed a piece of gum, it would truly have this effect on him. This is more just for, you know, like the aesthetic of this reality, I think. But I don't know. I just wondered if, here again, like Sean, if I'm reading too much into the whole him not being able to eat bit here.
All right, Sean, what do you think of the Neighborhood Watch meeting?
Is it really possible that this superhero Avenger could be done in by Big Red Bubblegum? Was the first thing I thought. Is like, that seems oversimplified, because then we could really take the Avengers out and take Vision out. We didn't have to kill him. We could have just gave him some bubblegum. But to Tim's point, I do think this is for the episode point of view for what happens at the talent show. I did enjoy watching the gum go down in the cartoon animation and getting clogged up in his little wheels. I thought that was pretty funny, so I did enjoy that. But yeah, this scene was okay, but it was really to set up what happens at the talent show, I think, more than anything.
Yeah. Scott, what are your thoughts?
I enjoyed, like, you know, the Neighborhood Watch. You think they're going to be talking about issues, but they're actually just gossiping. They're like, did you see that? I can't remember his name, but he's like, who always polishes his bowling trophies? Yeah, he bought them over, you know, in another county. And then, like, they're all joking, and the Vision's like, but I want to know, like, you know, trying to do stuff. And then he calls another guy a communist, and they're like, Viz, I didn't think you had a sense of humor, but you're a great guy. And it just shows, like, you know, they're just gossiping, which is a nice little turn on its head, because, like, in the 60s, you know, it would have been the women gossiping at their meeting while the men are doing the work, but in this, they flipped it on its head. But I did like, you know, the Big Red Gum gets Vision drunk, and, you know, he's just a fool at the talent show.
Yes, and we get to the talent show. Wanda is wearing her magician's assistant outfit, very hachi-machi there, and Vision stumbles up all drunk and basically reveals, you know, starts using his powers, and Wanda has to fake, you know, he levitates. Wanda makes a rope appear. He lifts up a piano. She turns it into a cardboard cutout, and one of the guys remarks, that was my grandmother's piano, along with he puts a hat, passes that through him, and she reveals mirrors. And then they get to the final act with the disappearing cabinet, and you know, Geraldine finds herself in the role of the missing lady, and she kind of remarks, you know, 1 minute I'm backstage, next minute I'm in the cabinet. It's like, what, do you know what happened? Like, no, it's magic. They are the hit, though, and they don't realize they're the hit as they go to leave, and they end up winning the comedy performance of the year, and they take a triumphant bow. And we have some, though, creepy For the Children vibes going.
Yes.
The line gets repeated. And we basically see everybody except for Mr. Hart isn't there. And we still haven't met Fred yet, Agnes's husband. So the whole town, all 16 of them or however many of them there are there on this green outside the local department store. So Who do we lead? We start with Sean this time. What did you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, the talent show was fine. I must say Wanda is very hotchy in her outfit. I thought she looked fantastic. She might have some Amanda LaRusso might have some competition. it's quite possible.
Sean's sweat list is starting.
Yeah, the Sean list.
The Thirst Club, not speaking.
The anti.
I never really thought Wanda was hot until I saw her in that magic outfit. I was like, oh, she's pretty hot. But the For the Children stuff is weird. And again, I have a theory on that too, based on what happens at the end of this episode, maybe. Yeah, very creepy vibes. And again, there's more like clues and more hint of weird, bad, just evil stuff that's going to happen in this episode than the first. And I think it's really good that they only did like that one big one in the first episode. And in this one, they plant like two or three or four in this one to keep you going. So, yeah, creepy stuff with that For the Children stuff. That really, really is weird.
Scott, what do you think of the drunken performance, the talent show, and the For the Children cockamamie?
The drunken performance was great. It was something out of that era that you would see of, like, you know, the dad getting drunk and, like, you know, the family rallying around to, like, save him and like, during the show, and, like, Wanda does it, and I just loved all of her, like, oh, she's thinking Vision is going to blow our cover, and she has to save him by doing like her Bewitched stuff, you know, but she didn't twinkle her nose, sadly, as I said before. But For the Children, like, if that wasn't going to get brought up right here, I was going to bring it up. It's real creepy, felt very cult like, and the way they kept repeating it, you know, because the talent show was supposed to be for the elementary school, but we haven't seen any kids running around here, unless I must have missed any in the background, but there's been no kids. And also, like, Andy, you brought it up as well, we haven't seen Agnes's husband. She talks about him a lot, but, you know, he's strangely missing. Like, he didn't go to the talent show. She's always cracking jokes about him because they used, for the magic trick, they used the rabbit, and it was Agnes's rabbit.
With a Mexican name, Senor, or a Spanish name, Senor, whatever. It was kind of
weird. I think there's something evil or something really weird with Agnes and the husband. I think there's going to be something really kind of bad with that in the end, is my gut.
Like, oh, Wanda. God. I'm almost thinking Rosemary's Baby now. Think of the couple.
You got all these theories I'm going to talk about at the end that you wait till this plays out.
Hey, look, Sean. oh shit! What's the old lady's name in Rosemary's? The act Ruth Gordon.
Yes.
I always have read. this is absurd. I've always read. I've always read Agatha Harkness in her voice. And the baby gonna see the doctor and take care of the baby, you know.
Jesus.
Makes total sense, though. I get it.
Oh, God. We might have just cracked the case here.
I could have. I see Ruth Gordon. I've never seen Rosemary's Baby, but I know her as Clint Eastwood's mother in Every Which Way You Might Lose.
Rosemary's Baby.
God damn. Babu stole my Oreos. Yep.
You gotta watch Rosemary's Baby, Andy. It's phenomenal.
Oh, it's on my to-do list. But
it's always streaming somewhere, I feel.
Yeah,
like.
I'm sure.
Not hard to find.
One of us. That's what the For the Children kind of went. But Tim, what are your thoughts on the talent show and the chanting?
Okay, on that note, For the Children, yes. For what children? For whose children? Well, we might know by the end of this episode. And I'll say that just sort of the climax to this with Vision drunkenly revealing his powers to the townspeople and Wanda using her powers to make it look like they don't have powers, I thought was pretty inspired. And I thought worked a lot better than just sort of the silly hijinks of the first episode, just all the increasing number of distractions to keep, you know, the boss and his wife out of the kitchen, which again might just speak to how, you know, 60s sitcoms were maybe a little bit better written than 50s sitcoms. I don't know. But I just thought that whether by design, whether by like commentary or what, just worked better than in the previous episode of the show. So yeah, I like where we left things there. And now I just have all of these questions because of that for the children's stuff. And with them being more embraced by the town now, it would seem, it's almost like they've passed this initiation.
Mm-hmm. All right. So they get back home with their trophy for winning, you know, best comedy performance. It wasn't so hard to fit in. After all, Wanda declares as they sit on the couch, but then she gets up suddenly, discover that all the talk for the children might have had an unexpected effect, because all of a sudden now she's noticeably pregnant. And there's also, they hear something going on outside. There's a strange man, a beekeeper outfit, crawling out of the sewer hole outside the house with a prominent logo on the back of the jumpsuit, until Wanda says no, and he isn't anymore. So, you know, Scott, what'd you think of this sequence? So all of a sudden we discover Wanda's pregnant and there's a guy coming out of the sewer in a beekeeper outfit. What's happening?
Well, it definitely seems like she magicked her way into being pregnant, as, you know, last I checked, Vision's a robot, and I know he can phase through stuff, but I don't know if he can, you know, phase into an egg, but the beekeeper thing was real weird, and her basically rewinding it to make it be like, she's like, oh no, this isn't going to happen. And like, where did the beekeeper go? Who is the beekeeper? What the hell's going on with the bees? Like, there's so many questions that I'm like, I got to wait another week for another episode. And, you know, I'm going to be chomping at the bit on Friday to watch this, the third episode, to just be like, what the hell's going on? Because it opened up so many questions.
As much as I have the questions, like, this is like a meal I want to eat very slowly. Like, as good as it tastes, I don't want to gorge myself on it, because I'm just going to be like upset that it's over. You know, it's not like The Mandalorian. It's like, you know, I'm enjoying this so much, and I would love to know all the answers and binge the show, but no, I want this. Tim, do you know what the logo is, and what do you think of this all of a sudden pregnancy and the guy in the beekeeper outfit?
Yeah. So it certainly appears that Wanda magicked herself into this pregnancy. Vision, for as much as he might mimic humanity, he is a synthetic man, and very much so. He is shooting blanks. Okay, so somehow this has happened by supernatural means. I mean, it worked in the comics, so. It seems to be that's what we're doing here. And, very suspect the way that we see this beekeeper emerge from the sewer, and Wanda quite literally just walks that back, almost, time stone style, where it just sort of rewinds and goes away. It's like it never happened. Who is the beekeeper? Immediately, I think of, just from the costume itself, the not Hydra, but their sort of sister organization, AIM, who are these guys, which kind of exist in the MCU. Like, that was the group, what was his name? Aldrich Killian,
mm-hmm.
was heading up in Iron Man 3. Didn't look like beekeepers, but AIM from the comics, they wear these, like, kind of hazmat suits with huge helmets or masks that sort of look like beekeepers. That's sort of the in universe joke. So maybe we're getting not Hydra but AIM in this series as sort of the criminal conspiracy that's driving events or trying to capitalize on events. That's kind of my take on that.
Yeah, they kind of look like the agency. I forgot what it was called, Monsters Inc. That cleaned up after like the children got into Monstropolis, kind of thing. That's what that kind of reminded me of, since I don't know of AIM. So Sean, what did you think of this part?
Oh, so many theories here in my head. Tim brought up AIM, which is kind of that tie-in going back to the Watch, right? kind of the spinoff of Hydra. That's kind of where I was going with that. The thing that throws me off about the end of this and with the beekeeper outfit is the bees, because AIM, what is the relevancy of bees flying around AIM? And
just that they look like beekeepers.
Yeah, I guess was maybe, all I is there something more to it? Like, there was a comment made in the first episode, or was it like, I guess the first episode about the devil being in the details.
Mm-hmm.
And I know one of the villains supposedly for Loki is going to be Mephisto.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's a Mephisto reference in that. I don't know. I'm with you, Tim, on AIM, but I'm wondering if there's something with Mephisto. And by the way, for the children, I think it references what happens with Wanda's children long term. I think that's what For the Children is. So that's my theory right now.
Well, look, if you want to go super literal, I mean, there's always Swarm. I thought about that too,
but that seems so far-fetched. I'm like, it can't be Swarm.
How can you resist doing a skeleton of a Nazi scientist made of bees? It's just...
Because the only Swarm I remember is one for the comics, but more importantly, the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends cartoon, and he was so cartoony. I'm like, I can't... If it's Swarm, that's amazing, but I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, it's a reach, but God, who knows?
But yeah, so a lot of interesting questions here. You could theorize all day, but that's what makes it fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, this is going to be quite the ride, especially for me, because you guys are going to educate me on a lot of the comics. We should just subtitle this podcast "Andy Learns Comics."
Well, I don't know. I don't think if we educated you or just gave you a bunch of theories.
You could do it more harm than good. Who knows? Because I
mean, we might just cause you to stroke out at the end of the day.
We're just giving you one big mind fuck, Andy. We really know what's going to happen. Just messing with you.
That's why I love to part with you guys. All right. So we get to the end of the episode. So that we rewind back to a newly pregnant Wanda and Vision in their home. So happy, in fact, that the world turns to color around them. And, you know, we get the house changes, everything. We get a second floor. And, you know, we're probably going to be in the 70s in the next episode. So, Tim, what did you think of this button on this episode where it you know, plus also do we hear any more voices, or is that earlier in the episode only? I'm trying to remember. It's so confusing. But do you guys know whose voice that was also? Because I think I recognized it as well. So, Tim, we'll leave with you.
I couldn't place the voice, but I admittedly I didn't think about it that hard either. So this goes back to what I said earlier about it seems to be about the evolution of the sitcom as much as it is a celebration of sitcoms. We're moving into the 70s now, much brighter color palette, which is pretty welcome. I'm looking forward to some 70s real estate porn now. I'd like to see what that house looks like as we move into the next decade. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. So I think that voice we heard was Jimmy Woo, right? They're played by Randall Park and Ant-Man and the Wasp. That's who I think it was. Sean, what do you think of the closing moments of this episode?
I agree with you. I think it is Jimmy Woo, because we all know he's in this show. At least he's been advertised to be in the show. Mm-hmm. And he is also a member of S.W.O.R.D., so that would seem to make sense. I like the colors turning into the 70s. My hope is we get a very Brady Bunch kind of house. That would be fun. So, it just kind of sets up for the next episode. You get the beekeeper, and then you transition to her being pregnant, and you're off and running to the 70s. So I kind of like how they're playing it out over the decade. So, the 70s and 80s should be a blast.
Yeah. All right. And Scott, what do you think of the end of this episode?
I love, like, we were hinted with color earlier, and, you know, now we're going to see it, and it's just the continuation of the show. I can't, like Sean said, I think we're going to get Brady Bunch with, like, the kid. Like, kid, is it one kid? Multiple kids? Like, we don't know. She's pregnant, you know, living out her life. Friday can't come soon enough.
Yes. All right. So final thoughts. Any Easter eggs we didn't mention? Any more things you see we might think we might see in episode 3? We'll start with you, Sean.
The Easter eggs that are in the beginning in the cartoon. Again, I don't want to go too much into those because that's overcomplicating and overanalyzing, and we haven't really seen anything from the that intro that really plays out yet. But I think we talked about most of them, but really intriguing first two episodes. I enjoyed the second episode a lot more than the first. The first was kind of the setup with the kind of like that one scene with the husband and wife that kind of set up something's not right. This one had a lot like kind of a treasure of a bunch of those kind of things, which I really, you know, embrace. So really looking forward to what episode three is going to play out with, but I thoroughly enjoy it. It's so great to have Marvel back after 18 months in a different way and fashion that's playing out slowly. I'm glad it's not a bulk drop like Cobra Kai, because it keeps me wanting more for Friday. Whereas I would have watched this in one day, like I did Cobra Kai, and have to go back and rewatch it, 'cause I would have missed 1,000 different things. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it's fantastic.
All right, Scott, final thoughts on the episode. Anything we didn't discuss?
No, I think we hit it all. Like, I'm sure everyone would want to hear like us just going down a rabbit hole with all these theories, because my mind is just racing right now. Like, after this episode, I'm going to check out a couple Vision and Wanda books just to see if there's anything I missed. I want to reread House of M. I just want more Marvel, and I'm glad some is finally coming to us.
All right. And Tim, final thoughts.
Biting my tongue a little bit. I might drop my grand unifying theory on the next episode if it continues to be supported. I don't know. Andy, you said you wanted to be able to savor these episodes, like, and have some time to really digest. I do not. I want it all now. I want it in my body now.
Get in my belly, basically.
Just like Wanda getting them kids in her. I want to be pregnant with this show. I don't want it to be drip fed to me, because I just think this is the type of series I think would benefit from like a massive drop all at once, whereas other shows that we've talked about this, that more tiered approach, like The Mandalorian works really well for that. But I think if they had just, what is this, 6 episodes? If they just put it out there.
9 episodes.
9. Yeah, Jesus Christ. 9.
Sorry, Tim.
I don't care. 6, 9, put them all out there. I need them now. It's driving me crazy to have to wait like this.
All right. Very good. So I enjoyed it also. And like I said, I can't wait. I mean, yes, I'm like of two minds. It's like, I want it all now, but I also don't want it to be over so fast. That's kind of what it is. Like, I want to enjoy the ride and be able to talk about it and not be under like all that pressure to binge it and worry that you're going to miss something like Sean said. But I'm very glad that we're going to be breaking this down every week, and I look forward to the ride, especially with you comics guys with me to, again, educate or confuse me. I don't care. It's going to be entertaining either way. All right. So, for Sean Kidd, Scott Shiflett, and Tim Cable, thank you for joining us on WandaVision Episodes 1 and 2, but we'll be back next week reviewing WandaVision Episode 3. So we'll talk to you then. Take care, everybody.